So Spencer's really into Harry Potter, like the same way we're into wrestling. She grew up with it, you know, the characters, the books, the movies. But now a few of them are like passing away. Like you had the first Dumbledore way back when, Alan Rickman not too long ago, Hagrid not that too long ago. And I'm like, oh dear. Are your childhood heroes dying one by one? Where have I heard that? And then J.K. Rowling is like being a scumbag with the whole, you know, trans stuff on social media. And I'm like, oh dear. Do you have to do some complicated mental gymnastics to dance around the fact that the people who brought you so much joy in life are actually pieces of shit?
Welcome to pro wrestling.
That's a really funny bit because me and Tyler both know the relationship you have with Spencer, and we know that you wouldn't for sure not say that. You keep that inside. This is all something that you're saying to us to make you to be more cooler than what you are, and you're not. I know you would never say any of that to your face. You said all that in your mind, yes, and now you're saying it here on a microphone because you're playing some sort of character. Now, if you were to say me and my girlfriend and the roles were reversed in that situation, yes, my girlfriend most certainly would make fun of me for finding out that everybody in Harry Potter is a scumbag or they're dying and mercilessly just making fun of me for it. Matter of fact, I'm on a roll now of the last 5 nights in a row my girlfriend has apologized to me for dating me.
Congratulations.
She has apologized, like, I'm sorry you have to deal with this, because she just berates me about something, and then we go to bed, and she goes, I'm sorry you have to deal with this. I'm like, thanks, I needed that. And then we can go to bed and sleep like normal individuals and start the whole day all over again. So I'm going to see if that streak can continue on, but don't put it on a front for us, Nick. We know what you're up to.
Tyler, you got any girlfriend stuff before we get started?
My girlfriend was very happy with me after our front row excursion to Collision. So thank you, Jake.
Go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. You got better tickets than my father did, and he's dying of cancer. So go fuck yourself. So go fuck yourself.
Hey, you know what? My bad.
My cancer-riddled father couldn't get tickets better than Tyler Wood, who would have been just happy to be in the building. I even specifically told Raphael, don't put any work into these tickets. Anywhere in the building will make this country bumpkin fucking happy. The fact that there's lights professionally set up will impress the fuck out of him. And what does Raphael do? Put you front fucking row so you could slap hands with CM Punk and FTR.
I didn't, great. But I could have, yes.
All right, hello and welcome to Ted Bell Pod. I'm Nick Alexander, joined by humorist Tyler Wood.
Oh, why, thank you, Nick. Hello.
And we are, of course, joined by the tent-wrecking machine, the Man Scout, Jake Baddick.
Thank you. I'm just getting one, but that's okay. You said it accurately and correctly. You didn't stumble over that one like you did last episode, so I appreciate that. Also, too, I like that we have downgraded Tyler to a humorist. And please check out his latest article in The New Yorker. It's coming out very soon because he's not a comedian anymore. He's a humorist for The New Yorker.
All right, today we have another induction into the celebrity wing of Tim Bell Pod. As we talk about an actor who has worked with Ice Cube, Chris Nolan, Tupac, Marlon Brando, Adam Sandler, Pamela Anderson, Quentin Tarantino, Michael Jackson, John Candy, Whoopi Goldberg, Will Smith, Eddie Murphy, Chuck Norris, and most importantly, Hulk Hogan. We are talking about the great Zeus and or Debo, Tom Lister Jr.
Tiny Lister. Refer to him by his God-given name, okay? Like, don't refer to him as Thomas. It's weird. He's going to be tiny the rest of the episode. I don't care. It's like, let's put that out there. Like, Jonathan Dwayne Lister Jr. Like, the second, excuse me, Jr. is for commoners.
What's your exposure to Tiny, wrestling-wise, movie-wise? What do you think about Tiny?
I'm surprised by how much stuff I've seen with him in it. I knew about Friday, that one. Watched it all the way through, and I'm like, yes, I knew Zeus was a wrestler. While doing some research on this, I didn't realize I had seen the Fresh Prince episode with him in it.
Yeah.
I've seen most of those on Nick at Night. Very talented guy, very funny, great part of Friday. I did not know he was in Zootopia. Watched that all the way through. His wrestling, most of it's not for me, but I did do the required research, Nick. I did watch No Holds Barred, and holy fuck, can't wait to get into that.
For me, Tiny Lister, yeah, like you kind of forget all the movies he's in because he usually just shows up and has a decent-sized role. I'd forgotten that he was in The Dark Knight and actually did a really good job in it. Yeah, seen him in multiple TV shows over the years. You know, his wrestling is what it is, and it's weird that that happened in reality. Although it's not as weird as the time that WWE had Samuel L. Jackson come in as Shaft and do a bit with Santino Marella. I mean, it's not any weirder than that was. But yeah, you just kind of forget all the stuff that he's in. And I know way too much information about Tiny Lister because Zeus was always Freight Train's dream match that he wanted to have. And on multiple trips that I would take Freight Train, he would proceed to tell me the filmography of one Tiny Lister and his favorite movies and quotes that he would say and reenact scenes from him. So everybody that's like, man, what's it like being around Freight Train? It's like Tiny Lister's IMDb page. That's what it's like being around Freight Train.
Tiny and or Thomas Dwayne Lister Jr. was born June 24th, 1958 in Compton, California. Couple things about his childhood. He was born with a deformed and detached retina in his right eye, which caused permanent blindness. But that's where he gets that unique look from. He also grew up in a Crip ran neighborhood. But contrary to what some have said or think, he was never involved in gangs, and he worked really hard to get out of the area. Before wrestling or the theater, Tom's first love was track and field, Jake, which he did at Compton High before going to Palomar Junco. He later transferred to Long Beach City College, where he recorded a 52-foot shot put throw, which helped him get a scholarship at California State. Jake, 52 feet good?
Is that with the collegiate implement or the high school implement?
Oh, God.
Is the question.
Long Beach, so it's City College.
Okay, so yeah, that would be a 16-pound shot, because in high school, you're throwing a 12-pound for men.
Okay.
It's 16-pound for collegiate men and world-class competitors. 52 is a pretty solid throw, better than I did. But of course, I was maybe 220, 230 pounds. I'm sure young Thomas Dwayne Lister II was a much larger individual and with muscle disparity. And that 16-pound shot put was most certainly not an obstacle that he could not overcome at Long Beach City College proper.
Tom's senior year at Cal State, he won the national shot put title with a 61 feet and 8 inch throw.
That's actually really good. Like, I believe my uncle, when he broke the world record, was... it's 71.7 was the world record. Now, obviously, in the shot put, you know, being 62, you're like, oh, that's not too far. Trust me, 10 feet away is like a completely different level. To be a world-class competitor, you probably need to be 68, 69, and it is a large feat from, you know, large feet, literal feet away from 62. Like, that is a completely different tier, different class altogether. But for Division II, that's a solid throw for sure. Obviously, because of his accolades.
After college, he competed for Converse Track Club. Not sure if that's related to the shoes or if that's just what it was called. But he eventually upped it all the way up to 64 3 inches, which, you know, still not quite Olympian level, but that's fucking crazy to throw a metal ball that far.
Well, actually, this is during the time of amateur athletes. I'm just trying to explain this. We're going to have to stop and go on a deep dive in track and field, okay? Like, we're going to have to go into amateur athletes, and we're going to have to get into this.
This is what my girlfriend feels when I have to go really in-depth on 7 tangents on wrestling to just explain why CM Punk, I'm mad at him right now.
Okay, well, we have to get a deep dive on amateur athletes and the way it was for track athletes. So what you had were track clubs, and they'd usually be sponsored by somebody. Like, obviously Converse was sponsored by the shoe Converse, so basically your whole job was to train, but you were an employee of Converse. That's what a lot of people would do, is they would get some sort of job that would sponsor them so they could focus mostly on their athletic competition, but they also had to do actual work for the company so they could retain their amateur status. Luckily, my uncle, who was a world record holder, he was, I think he was sponsored by Carahu weightlifting boots. So he had a weightlifting boot shoe company that sponsored him. And since he was also an Olympian, not just in the shot put, but also weightlifting, they labeled him as a salesman because this guy's going to be in different gyms across the country, traveling for shot putting, going to different meets, and he's going to be wearing this company's weightlifting shoes. So people, you know, be like, hey, those are good shoes. Do they work out well for you? Because it's a little bit more of a platform raise, so you can squat and deadlift and power clean a little bit easier. So he'd basically go into different gyms and be selling shoes. So that was part of his job. And I actually had a pair that I lifted in high school and college. Wonderful shoes, and obviously lasted the test of time. Like, I was using a weightlifting boot from the 70s, and it still held up when I was in college weightlifting and doing track and field in the early 2000s. So, you know, you have to have some sort of title. You have to do some sort of work. They just can't blindly give you money. Yeah. Much like the Russians were doing with their athletes, where they're like, hey, you're part of our military, but all you do is just go to hockey practice. My other uncle was also a world-class shot putter, and he had a sponsorship through Budweiser, and they required him to drive a truck and unload it, and unloading kegs of beer, he fucked up his back, and he had to end his career.
Oh, geez.
So, it was not always the best situation. But, you know, not every sponsor would give you the cushiest job so you can focus on your athletic endeavors. But you have to stay an amateur. There's no prize money. You're just basically winning meets for the love of the game, basically. So from what I know about Tiny Lister, I'm sure he saw this whole endeavor of track and field and making very little money as a dead-end road for him. And he still had several feet to go before he actually made any type of progress towards an Olympic event. So I'm pretty sure that's why you never heard of the amazing shot putting career of Tiny Lister.
After college, Tiny made his first pivot. He tried out for the USFL's New Orleans Breakers. And if you're like, what? Football? Tiny was 6'5", 275, and ran a 4.6940, so he had a chance.
Especially USFL, they were just getting security guards. And have you played high school football? Cool, we'll give you an opportunity.
Tom was cut after two exhibition games. They later called him back to ask him to come back and try out again. But by that time, he was off to Hollywood and into show business.
Dude, I had no idea he has over 200 roles across film, television. This is astounding.
Yeah, he's a busy dude.
We had the look. Like, it's funny. Like, I'm sure as a kid, he got picked on all the time for his weird looking eye. But if you wanted a scary looking dude, mm-hmm. This was your guy for decades.
Yeah.
And you just gotta like be nice to one casting agent one time and get one role. And then after that, sky's the limit for you.
Dude, I'm just thinking about the residual checks he got from these. And that's amazing. That's what I'm striving for one day, to have just random checks coming in at different times of the month.
I know, he probably got a $25 check for Dark Knight. I mean, it's amazing. He wouldn't have to stand on a picket line for that. That made billions of dollars. So surely Hollywood would break him off a nice residual check for that.
By the time football caught him back, I believe he was working on 1986's Blue City, which has David Caruso in it. From there, he just started grinding away. He had a spot on Webster, Armed and Dangerous, with John Candy, Meg Ryan, Eugene Levy, and Tiny loved John Candy. Like, in his shoot interview, he like couldn't speak about John without like getting really emotional.
There's always these great stories about John Candy. I think that this was floating around on Facebook like a year or two ago, where somebody was making a delivery at like a studio set or a television set. It was some studio set. Somebody was making a delivery, and this guy was kind of an older delivery guy, and he was like picking stuff up and off like a cart and setting it off on the side of the wall to get it out of the hallway so people can get down the hall. But it was like kind of heavier stuff, and all of a sudden this guy walked up and said, hey, do you need a hand with this? And the guy's like, it's my job, but if you want to give me a hand, I got some other deliveries I have to make. I'd really appreciate it. So this guy started helping this guy unload the cart, and all of a sudden these people came running out of nowhere, and they're like, what are you doing? Why are you making John Candy work? And John's like, no, I offered to help the man. It seems like he was struggling a little bit. I thought I'd give him a helping hand to unload this cart. And then he made everybody else help this guy unload his cart so he can make his next delivery on time. That's just the type of guy John Candy was.
Probably going to get details wrong, but he told a story from working on this movie, like a production guy or like just someone on the staff, no one that could ever help John Candy in any way. His dad died while they were making the movie, and John paid for him. He paid for the funeral. He paid for the guy to travel to the funeral, and he also paid him all the time he missed while being away and grieving. Like, just no reason, not from the studio, just straight out of John's pocket.
That's very nice.
Good guy. Can't believe Steve Martin was mean to him in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
What? Or is that just kind of method acting? Like,
oh, no, I meant like during the movie.
I was going to say, I was like, Steve Martin, I've always heard, is a nice individual. Are we breaking something? Are we Bill Cosby-ing Steve Martin on this podcast? Is that what's going on?
As much as he loved John Candy, felt the opposite way about O.J. Simpson. And this was way before it was cool to not like O.J. Simpson. Zeus met him on his 25-episode run on First and 10, where Tom played Otis. Now, working with the John Candys and the Websters of the world, it's cute and all, but it was time for a big boy role. And that's when Tiny landed 1989's No Holds Barred, starring Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
No holds barred. No holds barred.
That's how I refer to it. Every time it comes up, I think of the theme song, which basically says the title of the movie. It is a no holds barred. Like that 80s singer that always sounds like he's out of breath and he's just squeezing out the chorus after like running miles. No holds barred. Like it's his last word and will and testament is
no holds barred. No holds barred.
Apparently, Tom and Hulk had the same agent or agency. I couldn't really decipher that, but that landed him the audition. And he said he went into the audition as Zeus, like bare-chested, pumped up. He obviously got the role, but Tom didn't know much about pro wrestling before he actually got this role, although he would later grow to like Stone Cold and Rock and all those guys, but he was about to learn today.
Okay, objectively speaking, from a film perspective, this movie was bad even for the 80s, right?
I'm people know that deep down, hidden away, I am a Hulkamaniac still. And I can admit, this movie is a big pile of shit. It's so bad.
My favorite scene is where, and I'm replaying it right now, the love interest is completely convinced Hulk is just jerking off in bed while they're asleep. And then she looks over, no, what is he doing with his nearly bare ass out, just doing those elevated push-ups, brother? Keeping the swole on.
Which is the same outfit he wore on the sex tape. Like this is very, very similar to the skibbies that he put on as he was saying the N-word profusely. Feel like a bloated pig. But as the legend goes, wonderful Hollywood writer wrote the script for this thing.
Oh, God.
And Vince McMahon was like, fuck that shit.
Okay,
I don't follow any.
Okay.
I don't use union writers for shit. Fuck that. And him being Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan locked themselves in a hotel room and wrote the script in like 72 hours or something. Jeez, ridiculous.
Not a grain of cocaine between them.
May or may not have been fueled by cocaine when you write for that many hours straight. I don't know if there's another substance other than cocaine you would use, but I feel like in the 80s, cocaine was used on top of steroids, which were legal at the time, so that's okay. So steroid, coke-infused writing of a script because Vince McMahon didn't want to pay a union writer. So that's why this movie exists. That's why it is what it is. The jerking off scene is the funniest thing that Vince McMahon has ever done in his mind. He's like, this is hilarious. I wish I could do this on Raw more often. It's like, jerking off. It's fucking hilarious. Not only like the guy shitting his pants and being like, Dickie. The Stan Hansen looking down and laughing at somebody's wiener.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the other classic things that happened. And from what I understand, Brell was supposed to be Ted Turner. But in actuality, but in actuality, it was the most Vince McMahon impersonation I've ever seen in my life. Like, calling for a girl to be murdered in a parking garage seems like Vince McMahon behavior, not Ted Turner behavior. Like, yeah. I just...
No, dude, the blank check, and it's like, how much for me to own you?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Ted Turner, but in actuality, it's the most Vince McMahon portrayal we've seen in cinema ever.
Vince thought he was writing the hero there. He's like, I'll just make him like me, the good guy.
The guy who's always right, you know?
Out of everything that happened in the movie, what Spencer had the biggest gripe with was the scene Tyler mentioned, but she was like, no woman in the world has ever went to sleep in a wire bra. That was her big takeaway from the whole movie. You could tell, it felt like some 80s wrestler wrote the movie, because the good guys are just good because they're good. The bad guys are just bad because they're bad. There's no, like, stakes. There's no... Tyler just changed his background to sexy Hulk Hogan. There's no stakes. Nothing makes sense. Like, she just randomly falls in love with Hulk I don't know. It's just...
That's an 80s. That's an 80s thing. There's so many times where, like, these women just fall in love with these men because they're just there. I can't remember what movie I was watching.
Dude, it's any Tom Cruise movie happened. In the 80s. It's Days of Thunder. It's Top Gun. It's just, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They have a very linear thing going on, and Tom Cruise is like, I need to fuck something.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. It was Days of Thunder that I was thinking. I was like, why the fuck is Nicole Kidman even getting involved with this guy? Like, this is just stupid. And it's kind of stalkery, like the way that he went after in that movie. So I'm glad we're talking about Days of Thunder here, because I've actually waited for the next time I talk to Tyler about Days of Thunder, because I watched it on the plane going over to the UK the first time this year. And I was like, because I was coming back from the UK, I wanted something really American to watch. So I put on Days of Thunder, because that's what Delta had available. And I really was up and paying attention more so than usual, because I couldn't scroll on my phone when the movie was on. And I was watching it intently, and I go, man, this movie's kind of fucked. Like, this don't make any sense. Like, this whole thing. I mean, it's great. I love it. But yeah, I still don't know why Nicole Kidman saw anything in Tom Cruise, or the characters in Days of Thunder saw anything in each other.
It's a fantastic movie, especially if you like racing, but it really just inserting the love storyline throws it completely off for no reason. I feel like No Holds Barred, again, it's kind of like, why include that? There's enough shit going on anyway. People are shitting their pants. There's PPs being looked at. You don't need to have this beautiful woman in there. This has everything I want already.
Like, that 90% of the dialogue was either grunting or screaming. There was just no words in the entire movie.
Dude, that the screaming, it's like they're fucking anime characters and they're about to power up, and just screaming helps you get that last little,
So, you know, they have to advertise the movie. But there's no reason to buy TV ads when you have your own TV program. And you can just book a feud for marketing purposes. That is exactly what happened when the human wrecking machine Zeus would set out to destroy Hulkamania, which is a bad idea if you want there to be a No Holds Barred 2.
All right, explain to me, please, why was it Zip, right? What's the main character's name?
Rip.
Oh, Rip. Why? Zip versus Zeus would be really fucking weird, but I wouldn't put it Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan.
So why was Rip not just Hulk Hogan? Why was Hulk Hogan playing a character?
To show range, brother. To show that he can be a different person. Duh.
He wasn't even a good babyface. He was kind of a piece of shit.
Well, so was Hulk in real life, too. He did a lot of hill shit throughout his career.
Okay, fair point.
As a good guy.
But he had a hand gesture, he had merch, he had color coordination. Like, what more do you fucking need as a baby face in the 80s?
I remember as a kid, it really disturbed me he wasn't dressed like Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
I was like, what the fuck is this blue leotard thing? This isn't Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it's weird. It's disturbing. Fun fact about No Holds Barred and the whole Rip'em shirt. My friend Ken Tuccio, who now runs Best Trivia Ever, he also it's one of the best trivia companies because it's Best Trivia Ever, and it's also expanding up and down the East Coast. He also ran Barbershop Window.
Oh,
and
fucking love that site, dude.
He was smart enough to figure out that WWE had let the No Holds Barred Rip'em license elapse. Put out a Rip'em shirt and made money off of it. And then WWE found out about it, and then they refiled the copyright. And then WWE's attorney's like, hey, we see what you're doing. You got about 90 days to stop that before our license kicks in. And he goes, no problem. I've made enough and I'll move on. So I actually have a Rip'em shirt that he gave me, and it's one of my prized possessions. It's pretty funny.
Dude, that's crazy. I bought a few of those as a teenager. That was some damn good merch you put out.
We were friends as grown men, and you were buying his shirts as a teenager. And that doesn't make me feel old at all. So
Zeus would show up in the actual WWF May 8th, 1989 on the Brother Love show, and he tells Hulk Hogan that he's going to destroy him. I'm not entirely sure when this was televised, but it happened. As a fan that knows what's happening, it's like, this is this actor coming into wrestling, blah, 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 blah. But as a little mark watching this on VHS, probably 6 years after it actually happened, I believe Zeus could kill Hulk Hogan. As adult fans, I think the magic and wonder of a new scary monster being able to shred our hero is lost on us. Zeus, at the very least, really had a look that was legit.
I got in a conversation with Delirious one time, and he was talking about Zeus being in wrestling, and he was like, man, that guy got it. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? And he goes, that guy knew how to stand in the ring. Like, the way he stood, you believe that he was a monster. He goes, now when he did shit, it was terrible. But like, he goes, not a lot of guys know how to stand in the ring and be a star, but that guy did. And I mean, standing in the ring was just enough to make this all pass in our minds as children. But even as a child, it was kind of confusing. Like, you knew this movie was coming out, but he wasn't Hulk Hogan. But now Hulk Hogan is fighting this guy. It was this weird multiverse thing that was happening. Before we even knew what a multiverse was. And all I remember from this era of Hulk Hogan feuding with Zeus was just Hulk. They would always cut to Hulk looking utterly confused. You know, like that lost, like that poor puppy dog look that you get a look on his face, that mustache, where you get like kind of a sad, frowny look on his face, and then look around like, what's going on? What's this about? I don't know. Like, what's going on? Huh? I'm so confused. I don't know. That's all I remember of it is sad-looking, confused Hulk Hogan every time they cut away from Zeus, just looking ominous with a weird-looking eye.
Brooke is doing what?
At May 27th, 89's Saturday night's main event, shit gets real. Hulk was set to take on the Big Boss Man in a steel cage, which is actually a really good match where Hulk gives Boss Man a superplex off the top of the cage. Before the match, Zeus is led out by Slick to confront Hulk, and he ain't playing around. He kicks him, he lands a few clubs to the shoulders, drops the champ before walking back to the back, and then to close the show out, Hulk cuts a promo, more or less saying that he's had problems with Zeus since before, during, and now after the movie. The movie. Go see the movie. For the love of God, go see the movie. All my Hulkamaniacs, get a gun, hold up a 7-Eleven, take the money, spend it on tickets, to the movie. I, Hulk Hogan, is in with Bat Guy Zeus, that movie. July 8th on Brother Love, Zeus is back to join Macho Man and Sensational Sherry. They've linked up as Hulk and Macho were on bad terms. Macho and Sherry kind of hold the fort down as far as like talking, but as you brought up, Zeus is like just huffing and puffing and looking like a badass.
Same shit he did on set for hours upon hours. So to do it for a 30-second promo, he most certainly can do that.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Hulk would later formally accept a challenge for 89's SummerSlam. On July 29th, Saturday night's main event, Zeus attacks Brutus during his match with Macho. That brings out Hulk to get his bitch ass bear hugged. Macho hops in before Hulk and Brutus fend them off with chairs.
Let me just say this. How much of a good brother Hulk is. He could have picked any top babyface at the time, and he picked Brutus because he's like, you know what? This is going to be a massive payday. Like, we're going to be in a big main event with this film star, Macho Man, myself. It's the 80s. I could have picked any top babyface, but I'm picking you, my friend, Brutus, to do this so you can have residuals and payoffs and huge money at the gate and whatever forever. Like, this is going to up your stock throughout the company. And all the shit that Brutus did through the years, and Hulk still was with him, and it just took years and years and years of Brutus taking advantage of Hulk's friendship to finally, after decades, to being like, fuck Brutus. Like, you could say what you want about Hulk Hogan. He does look out for his friends. That is something he does, no matter how bad they are to him.
It's kind of like how we let Tyler do the podcast. It's like, we could have picked someone who had seen wrestling before for a wrestling history podcast. But no, we were like, come on, Tyler, let's get you over, brother.
I appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, wrestling of the people who we were discussing on the show. Like, we could have got somebody that actually had wrestling knowledge as opposed to, oh, I used to watch WWF in 2009. Yeah, I'm the biggest fan ever. I can name everybody who appears on Raw. Not everybody on SmackDown. That's a little tough to see because that's on Fridays. I know everybody who's on Raw. I'm the biggest wrestling fan ever. What's WCW? I never heard of it before. Fuck it.
Jake, I'm offended that you think I didn't watch every Friday night SmackDown in 2009. You think I was having dates? Are you kidding me?
So at 89's SummerSlam, Zeus makes his pay-per-view debut. Zeus gets a promo with Macho and Sherry again over a magic cauldron, which tells the future. Zeus just kind of stands there again, looks crazy, while Macho and Sherry handle the promo and witchcraft.
I feel like they just saw a cauldron, and they're like, oh yeah, let's do a promo with this. I mean, it's in the building. It was probably like a Salvation Army bucket, like that's very similar to what like Ezekiel Elliott used to jump into for the Dallas Thanksgiving game. But they just like, ew, spray paint this black, it'll look like a cauldron, and then I may be like a wizard, you know, like wizard. That might be the next incarnation. I go from being the Macho Man to Macho King to the Macho Wizard. Yeah.
Right before the match, we get a Brutus and Hogan promo. No witchcraft, only cocaine. Hulk says he swam through the Hudson to get to the Meadowlands and swam with such force that he parted the water like Moses.
God damn, that's good. Fuck you guys. 80s promos, and it'll get much better than that, son. And you gotta yell and say it really loud.
Hulk and Zeus start the match out. I thought that was like a weird choice. Why wouldn't you want to sort of like milk that tag in showdown a little bit?
Maybe because they're like, after the bell rings, it's all downhill anyways. My head was going to just give it to him right away. And then let's get into the actual work of the match when we get Macho Man in. And then we'll have Sherry do some shit. And then at the end, we'll just bring him back out again and get to the finish.
Apparently, they only taught Zeus choke and bear hug.
He's like an unevolved Pokemon.
And you can't do that 10 minutes into a match. So you got to put it right at the beginning. So that's why.
Zeus is impervious to pain, which is a big issue for the good guys. Barber works the most of this match and takes the heat. Is that what takes the heat means?
Sure.
Okay, but Hulk overcomes the odds, yada, yada, yada. Cena wins.
It was odd to see. I think there are like a couple of things where you can kind of see that Zeus does not have the most wrestling experience because he's playing to a camera very well. He's playing like small, but he's not projecting out to the huge audience there.
Yeah.
Well, and then there was that time where he said, all right, cut. Can I do this again? Like right in the middle of a match? Can I get one more take on this?
Following SummerSlam, Zeus formed an alliance with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, leading up to that year's Survivor Series. There, the Hulkamaniacs of Hulk, Jake the Snake, and Demolition face the Million Dollar Team, Ted, Zeus, and the Powers of Pain. They start with Zeus and Hulk again, but kind of tease a tag where, you know, they get a big pop when Hulk stands in. So Zeus ends up choking the shit out of Hulk, which is probably cathartic for some people. Hebner tries to break it up. He hits him with a 5 count. He tries to pry Zeus off head first. But after shoving the ref twice, Zeus gets DQ'd, goes back to choking Hulk. Because if you remember, Sherry could see into the future with that cauldron. So Zeus was like, what did you say on that tape, motherfucker? I actually got distracted managing our social media for the rest of this match because Jake went viral. But Hulk's team wins. I just don't know the details.
And I like how like we're shitting on Hulk Hogan, but then we take time like, hey, let's be fair, he is a good friend to people. Where once again, Vince McMahon gets no fucking grace from us.
No.
Like he is the one person, like Hulk Hogan, the police force, all get grace. Not fucking Vince McMahon. He's a terrible individual and should be insulted, taken down, and every action that he's ever taken in his life should be criticized to the umpteenth degree.
Well, amen. The police have never screwed me out of a good memory with someone I want winning a championship, Jake.
After winning the Survivor Series, the feud between Hulk, Brutus versus Randy and Zeus ended in a steel cage match December 27th, 89 at the No Holds Barred pay-per-view, which Sean Mooney called the tag team event of the decade. Suck it, Rock and Roll Express.
The match and the movie, if I'm not mistaken, was the big advertisement. You can get the match and the movie, and you can watch it all on pay-per-view, because at this time, Vince McMahon is the king of pay-per-views. So the idea of getting pay-per-view movies, we're still several years away from DirecTV kind of popularizing that. So doing some sort of event like where you get to see a movie in your home before streaming, before DirecTV, and all those options are available, this is kind of a cutting edge type thing. I mean, the only place you could have done this would be like in a hotel room somewhere and getting a movie. Yes, I am that. That's how old I am. I remember being in hotels where you could buy movies.
Little fun fact here, the buy rate for Survivor Series 89, 3.34. The buy rate for the movie, the match, 1.6.
And that's the end of the storyline. Yada, yada, yada. We're done. Bye, bye, bye. Just put Zeus in a box and ship him back to Hollywood. Or we could give him a plane ticket and send it back. No, put him in a box. Ship him. It's much cheaper that way.
The movie isn't on the network for some asshole reason, but you can still find this match. It is on an old school WWE super tape compilation in the classic home video section if you would like to see this match. But, you know, Hulk wins, yada, yada, yada. Vince actually offered Zeus a whole year run where they were going to put the belt on him. But Zeus's agent was like, no, get the fuck out. Everyone dies and we're making so much less money. What are you doing?
You want to exploit me like a circus animal? Please, no. I'd much rather go to Hollywood where I'm treated like a racehorse.
No, you don't get it. You're going to be champion. You're going to have my championship. I'm going to make you a star.
So, I was in a movie with John Candy, motherfucker. Like, what do you want? I'm already a star.
I'm
grateful to have my ass here. Yeah.
So it was back to Hollywood, at least until summer of 90. On July 7th, 1990, Zeus fought Abdullah the fucking Butcher in World Wrestling Council in Puerto Rico. And we can all poo-poo that he is an actor in the main event and it's not fair. But if you work Abdullah the Butcher in the suicide mission that is 80s, 90s Puerto Rico wrestling, you are a goddamn wrestler.
Well, it's like Abdullah's not concerned with making Zeus look good. Abdullah only cares about Abdullah. That's essentially the issue. And Abdullah's going to do his shit. And if you don't make yourself look good, then fuck you then. Like, it's kind of how it is with Abdullah. And he has no interest in making Zeus look good, so obviously the match is awful. Cause,
yes.
Well, I don't know what the problem was. Zeus got his shit in. He did the choke and he did his punches, so.
I guess there's not much else to do. Zeus very smartly took two policemen with him to Puerto Rico after, you know, knowing about Brody and all that. He was paid $22,000 for his troubles. And again, if you're looking for a Mega Okada, it ain't it. If you are looking for an Abdullah match with no hardcore spots with an untrained wrestler, jackpot.
It is very nice that Abdullah did not give him hepatitis like he does everybody else.
Yeah, polite of him.
He's a Crip, not a Blood. That's why.
Following the Puerto Rico match, Zeus took a long break from wrestling to get back into movies and TV shows, which are fake and scripted, mind you. Tiny was in Fresh Prince, a Michael Jackson video, Universal Soldier. In 93, he did a spot in Walker, Texas Ranger. And did you know the flu gets a Chuck Norris shot every year? You remember when the internet was just Chuck Norris jokes and not the unraveling of society?
Yeah, there was that. And then there was also the classic websites of Mr. T ate my balls.
Wait, what?
Dude, you don't remember the era of so-and-so ate my balls?
No, I don't even know that, no.
Yeah, I know you don't fucking know because you weren't even born when it happened.
I was a meat spin kid.
There were websites. I don't know what that is.
Feel free to Google it. I think it's still up.
So there was these websites. The most popular of them was Mr. T Ate My Balls. And it was just Mr. T with captions said, I pity the fool that don't let me eat them balls. Like stuff like A team, more like B team, because I'm all about eating them balls.
Oh, God.
And then they would branch out into like Ric Flair, like RicFlairAteMyBalls.com. It'd be a picture of Ric Flair getting chopped, and it'd be like, I love me some salty balls right now. Woo.
I ate your balls in my house.
Yeah, like I think that might have been one of them where it was on an interview set and that caption was up. So that was pretty much what the internet was for me.
I need to find that because that's hilarious.
I definitely know they wrote an article because this is how far down the looking glass we are with the fucking internet. Somebody did an article about it. Like, yes, there was a novel time in which there was a website called MrTAteMyBalls.com. And like somebody wrote a fucking Deadspin article about it or some shit like that. Somebody did a whole psychological assessment on what it meant for society and some dribble in a magazine. Internet magazine, not an actual magazine. Tyler doesn't know anything about those either, so...
In 95, Tiny got arguably his most well-known role as Debo in Friday, which is a character loosely based on Hulk Hogan as far as him being like, oh, that's your world title? That's my world title. What y'all think about Friday? Good movie. Chris Tucker carries the hell out of it, but it's just fun.
Yeah, I liked it. It's a solid movie.
I mean, it's the movie that he needed because everybody knew him beforehand as the guy from No Holds Barred. So... Now he's known as Debo, so that's, he's like, great, I fucking love this. I'm no longer Zeus anymore.
Other cool things from 95, he was in ER, Step by Step, Martin, Damn Gina. And then we get to a story we've told 100 times on this podcast. An ex-wrestler is doing too good in Hollywood. He's too famous, so he has to fall back on wrestling so that he doesn't make too much money. If you remember, in WCW, 94 to 96, right up until NWO and even some after, they were basically a cover band for things that happened in the 80s with WWF. So you know your boy Zeus had to get some of Ted's money. WWE has a video up on their YouTube that said Z Gangster debuted May 18th, 96, which is either a typo or just another one of Vince's lies. Because it was actually March 16th, 96, to set up 96's Uncensored March 24th. So at Uncensored, the Mega Powers were set to face the Alliance to End Hulkamania, sponsored by Gawker.
That's how you know Hulk is over, because his name's, he's associated with both teams. It's like he's in the Mega Powers, and the other one is just Team Fuck Hulk Hogan.
I remember this happening, and it's so funny now because he's a coworker of mine, and just think about Tony Schiavone going, it's Z Gangster! It's Z Gangster! Like, hearing Tony Schiavone refer to a guy who we all know is Zeus as Z Gangster, as it means anything. And that's the beauty of Tony Schiavone, is he says things that you know deep down in his heart he doesn't believe. But he will say it into a microphone on television, and it sounds like he means every bit of it. But you deep down inside know that he doesn't.
For this match, Hulk Hogan said they could bring anyone to try to beat him and Macho. And their bright idea was to bring in someone that Hulk had already beaten 3 times, 4 if you count the fucking movie. That will show up. In the main event of March 18th's Nitro, Savage and Hulk are facing Sullivan and Flair. This dissolves into chaos when Pillman runs out to attack Macho. Arn is there before we get Z Gangster and the Ultimate Solution, who is Jeep Swanson, rated a 0.96 out of 10 on Cage Match.
Well, his neck is a 10 out of 10, Nick. That man has a thick, thick neck. Little known fact, I just found this out. He was also Bane in Batman and Robin.
Actually, Jeep Swanson, like he was also much like Tiny Lister. When you needed a tough looking dude that was massive, Jeep Swanson was also the guy that you went after.
And he went by the name the Ultimate Solution, which was changed from the Final Solution for some reason. that I don't know. I don't know why they would change that. I have no idea. Was that a suggestion from Kevin Sullivan or Hulk Hogan? Do we know?
I don't know. But it's flirting with some problematic shit for sure.
Flirting? No, it's the same name as something very bad. Flirting nothing. It's fingering it, Nick. They're beyond flirting.
All right, so this takes us to the greatest night in the history of our sport. 96, uncensored, and the motherfucking triple-decker doomsday cage. Gun to my head, this is the worst match in wrestling history, I think.
Bro, I can't tell you how disappointed I was that I need to watch this as a child. Like, of all the WCW pay-per-views, this is the one I was like, because I was a WWF kid, they were doing In Your Houses this time, and they were $14. So that was a little bit easier to take my allowance money for. But like the $30-$40 for WCW full on pay-per-views, I was like, I don't know. And I always felt like after every WCW pay-per-view, you never felt like anything cool happened anyway. So
why do you want me to watch all of them then, Jake?
Well, you at least need to know what happened. But I lived it and was glued to the TV set on Nitro and what the results were from the past weekend. I just remember being like, man, I really want to see this because I was one of those last remnant of kids that are like, yeah, don't destroy Hulk Hogan. We're really the entire TV audience when Kevin Sullivan's like, we're going to destroy Hulk Hogan on Hulkamania. People are like, well, we're kind of fine with it. I mean, it's kind of had its run. Might as well just kind of let it die, you know? But no, like I was like, man, Triple Decker Tage, Z Gangster, Kevin Sullivan, Ric Flair. Like, how is Hulkamania going to overcome this? And little did we know, Hulk Hogan's just gonna prevail. He's just gonna run through everybody. He's gonna beat 16 people, go through three different levels of a cage, and that's a thing. Also, too, I don't know if I could say this aloud. This may be clickbaity, and this may not be something real, but fuck it, I'll say it on this podcast and we'll see if I get in trouble for it. I did overhear one day at work, somebody said, what are we gonna do about this triple decker cage?
Oh shit.
So
hopefully not this.
Hopefully we have talked ourselves down from this, but I overheard something like, so how are we going to do this triple decker cage? And I wanted to turn, I go, I don't know, whatever WCW did, and do the opposite. Yeah. That's the,
yeah, couldn't be worse. God damn, dude, the ending of this. Did you guys rewatch any clips or anything for this?
No, yeah, I rewatched it and I was just angry. I hit the skip button so many times, but yeah, the ending is brutal.
Dude, Luger goes for a punch on Macho. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Macho Man. Flair's holding him. Macho's supposed to duck. He does. It's fluid. And Luger goes, oh, no, can't hit. I'm going to hit Rick. Like, he pauses and then follows so through. And Flair's down. Flair's down for the count. Macho's over on the side. Hulk's laying in rights. And then Hulk's like, all right, we got to get the fuck out of here. They go to leave the cage. And then it's like, oh, fuck, you got to pin Rick. And Macho jumps back in and pins him because they thought it was done.
We could go through every point of this match, but I will just say this is a match that will test your love for professional wrestling. Despite having some of the greatest names in wrestling history in it, it makes no goddamn sense. It follows no logic. And it is just shit. Following this match, it was back to stupid Hollywood to make stupid millions of dollars and not even do wrestling. Tiny with land rolls and barbed wire with Pamela, Moesha with Brandy, and the Jamie Foxx show with Jamie Foxx. Wrapping up the 90s, he was in Fifth Element. He'd appear in Ice Cube's 98 directorial debut, The Players Club, and head into the 2000s starring in Next Friday.
Oh, you are skipping over a fine film, Nick. Little Nicky. He played one of the brothers in Little Nicky, and that is still a fun watch. I rewatch it every couple of years.
Yeah, we rewatched it. It's fun. Yeah.
No, don't you fucking... Yeah, it's fun. It's a fucking great movie. I remember seeing Little Nicky in the theaters and us showing up super fucking early, and we just walked into the theater where they were playing it back to back to back, and we saw the last 15 minutes with no context of the movie whatsoever. Just saw the last 15 minutes. And like Ozzy Osbourne comes out, we're like, dude, I can't wait for this movie to start because this looks like the most badass fucking movie of all time. And, you know, normally when you see the end of a movie, you're like, I'm spoiled or it's not as good as I thought. No, fuck it. It was one of the greatest fucking movies I ever saw in my entire life. Like, that's how good Little Nicky is.
he's physically in it some, but he's like mostly doing voice work here. The whole shtick is that he's a demon in someone else's body. So, but he's in it some. Tiny was in music videos, video games, TV shows, iconic movies like Dark Knight, Zootopia. Just a bonkers career, just shy of 40 years in the industry. Tiny had like 6 things come out after his passing, with his last movie ever being The Haunting of Hell Hole Mine. That brings us to Zeus's way too young passing. Tiny, obviously a monster guy, but by 55, he had type 2 diabetes. So heading into his 60s and the hellscape that was 2020, Tiny caught COVID around August 2020. So this is pre-vaccine, but he still beat it the first time. Then in December, he caught COVID again, and he was so sick he had to cancel shooting a film, which he had literally never done. On December 10th, police were called for a wellness check on Tiny and found him dead in his home in Maria Del Rey, California. He was 62 years old. They thought it was just COVID, but it was like kind of complications of COVID that got him. He had hypertension, he had cardiovascular disease. Throw that in with diabetes, and COVID seemed like more, or I guess it's still around. I don't know why I'm saying past tense, but COVID seemed like more of a disease that would exacerbate something you already have to possibly kill you.
No, it's not around. The New World Order has already won, Nicholas, so it's fine.
Thank you.
This is the only time I butted in the death of a topic of discussion with a joke, so continue. Sorry.
But yeah, it was this horrible cocktail that would end the life of a great actor and seemingly pretty cool guy. Final thoughts on Tom Lister Jr.
I always heard the name Zeus referenced in wrestling history one way or another, and I'm glad I finally got to experience what was the greatest wrestling film of all time, No Holds Barred. And, you know, Tiny, he made an impact on wrestling. He made an impact on wrestling in a big way in a small section of time. And then he went to WCW, and that was a whole shit show. But he is a fantastically gifted actor. And going through his IMDb, I was surprised at how much stuff I had seen that I forgot he was in. Like, he wasn't just a surface-level actor. He was a steadfast character actor in Hollywood for a very long amount of time. And he's very talented. And glad we got to take this little excursion down his life and his career.
In his shoot, Tiny came off as such a just a nice, humble, grateful, down-to-earth guy. And he's someone who, with just a handful of appearances, managed to carve out a spot in wrestling history. He was great at what he did in the acting world. I mean, Friday, Little Nicky, Dark Knight, Zootopia, I guess No Holds Barred, are just movies that came into my life and, you know, brought me a lot of enjoyment. And there's Tiny right in the middle of it. He had the pieces to be a great wrestler. You know, just look at his size, the way he stood there and was a star. But, you know, he wasn't a pro wrestler. He was an actor who went off to greener pastures. But, like I said, seemed like just a great dude, so humble, so thankful for the opportunities he got in life. And since he's woven into Hulk's story, he's someone that's going to hang around wrestling history for a long, long, long time.
As I said, Zeus was always Freight Train's dream match, and there were a couple times where we discussed for it to possibly happen. I think me and Madman Pondo went back and forth, and we had some sort of contact, but it was going to be like $10,000, and I love Freight Train, and it was almost worth it for me to get Zeus versus Freight Train for $10,000, and a match that consisted of chokes and bear hugs, but I almost wish I would have done it just for the story of it. Zeus seemed like a tremendously nice man, very down to earth in the sense of knowing who he was and what he wanted to do with life. And yeah, you got to think about him being a child, probably getting picked on all the time for this eye that looks different, when really it was his superpower. It was the thing that got him noticed. It probably helped him get a lot of roles and made him want to get bigger and stronger so people wouldn't pick on him. And it's just a testament to your life sucking as a child, and it actually forging you to be highly successful in your life later. So, yeah, nothing but respect for Tiny Lister. As far as celebrity topics of discussion, this is probably one of my favorites. So I enjoy talking about him and laughing and just bringing up memories and remembering how good he was in The Dark Knight and Friday. So, cool dude. Glad we got to talk about him today.
All right, that is Tiny Lister's 10 Bill Pod. Oh, man, thanks for donating to the Patreon, like always, for listening in general, for talking to us on social media. Jake, Tyler, you got anything?
Thank you for supporting the podcast. We appreciate anybody that, you know, comments on any social media posts. They tag us. So a lot of great stuff. If you guys have anything that you want to see in the future, anything that we've been doing you want to see more of, let us know and we'll bring it to you.
Yeah, make sure you leave a review on whatever platform you listen to. That tremendously helps. Also, too, if there's any Patreon episodes you want to suggest, we took a suggestion from Patreon member Big Bob, and we did top fives, and top fives will kind of be a regular thing. So if you guys are interested in that, suggest a top five category for all of us to argue about and mostly just make fun of Tyler for getting his top five wrong. please do that. Anything that would give me an opportunity to yell at him, the more creative the topic, the better. So leave a review, leave suggestions. We'll listen to them.
All right. That is it for this week. We will see you next week with the Son of Zeus.
Jerking off. It's fucking hilarious.